Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about cooperation. And it's such an important thing because how will we build consensus and have a successful outcome from our negotiations if we don't have cooperation, right? Yes. So it's one of the real foundations of what we need. So, as we often do on this show, let's try getting together and defining some types of cooperation that we will need in order to reach that successful outcome. Types of cooperation within our context, within the context of a mediation, a dispute resolution, a negotiation, even a workshop or a seminar that needs cooperation too, doesn't it? Yes. So, thank you. I see there's lots of folk. Thank you all for being here. I think we're going to divide into categories, and then we're going to work on each one of them because we are practical people, and this is the practical show, and we want to know what to do. Mm-hmm. So what types of cooperation do we need? I think the number one that we're going to talk about and people are interested in is the need to listen with an open mind. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate type of cooperation, isn't it? We need to the cooperation in listening with an open mind, really, really thinking about things and listening. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about full participation. Sometimes you've got a group that's there kind of not so willingly, and you need to get them to fully participate, fully engage, fully do whatever it is they're supposed to do to the sincere best of their abilities and not just, well, not just kind of, yeah, people call you blow it off. Yeah, not just say give it lip service, say they will, but then not really do it. Mm-hmm. I think the next one that we're going to talk about, because we've talked about empathy and being it so important, mm-hmm, and that the next kind of cooperation we're going to need is to develop some empathy. Mm-hmm. And we get that from our discussions and our participation. Right. Get some empathy. Get some understanding. Mm-hmm. This is a really good one that a lot of people are talking about. And thank you all for your participation. That we need to have cooperation to work as a team. Need cooperation to work as a team. Really get it done. Let's all work as a team, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good point that quite a few people are making also, not only as a team, but we need cooperation to work with outsiders. And they need to cooperate with us, right? Right. We have to cooperate not only as a team, which is internal, but we have to, our team oftentimes, has to cooperate with outsiders, and their team, they need to be able to cooperate with us. So it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point that we've talked about on prior shows. Prior shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, that you need to cooperate and to assign, in a sense, to develop, to agree to, really, which is cooperation in and of itself, to a media spokesperson. It's getting more and more important. Didn't need to do that, but now that there's all kinds of citizen reporters, you need somebody to be the the person that is going to be the touch point for media, for information, for dissemination, right? Yeah. And not just everybody, because that gets confused. Mm-hmm. And especially if there's going to be an issue with other groups taking an opposite side, it'll get quoted. It'll get quoted ugly. So you need cooperation to agree to a media spokesperson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's take this one at a time, and let's talk about these, and let's find out how to do this as a practical manner. Right? Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we're going to talk about is listening with an open mind. This is always true. We always have to listen with an open mind. And we as leaders need to be especially careful about our own open mind, right? Yeah, because we've had lots of experience. We've done this. We've seen this before. And sometimes that makes us kind of not really a good open listener anymore, right? And you have to be careful of that, because this is a new group with new issues, with new personalities, and you have to be fully engaged. I see that sometimes. I make a real conscious effort to be fully engaged. But don't you see that sometimes? People are agreeing that you see that sometimes with groups. Yes, sometimes with administration, right? Mm-hmm. They're going through the motions, right? But they're really not listening anymore. They're really not thinking about it. They're going on prior experience. They're going on maybe even a preconceived notion, right, of what needs to be done, what will be done. And sometimes it's because the group is just advisory, and they have no intention of taking the advice. They've made up their mind, right? Yes, I actually see that a lot, because I do corporate work, right? And there's a lot of rules in the United States and laws about equality and having everybody's voice be heard, right? And sometimes you have a group. Sometimes you have I'm going to call him or her a supervisor. It's not usually their role. It's usually something else. It's like CEO or founder or something like that, where you have somebody who was kind of required, either by law or public opinion, to get together an advisory group. But they don't have to follow the advice, you see, which makes them less interesting. I insist that they come when I see that that's happened, and that we really have advice that is valid and that needs to be talked about and heard. Because what they're going to do is they've already made up their mind. They've got a preconceived notion, and it needs to be modified sometimes. Now, sometimes the preconceived notion is what the group kind of decides is a good idea. Well, that's okay. Uh-huh. And the CEO or whoever can pretend that it was their doing due to the group, right? But sometimes there's something that they need to really hear. And if it's an advisory group, I make the person who's being advised come. Mm-hmm. I don't do the fake group. I really don't. And if they want my reputation to be attached to it, mm-hmm, they're going to have to really come and listen with an open mind, right? Listen with an open mind. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, sometimes that it is not actually my people are asking if the CEO, whoever, is very busy. Do I record the sessions? Do I record the meeting? Do I record what everybody said? The answer is it's not my first choice. Now, I've done it out of necessity, just like that. It's my first choice to include the CEO or whatever the title is who needs to be advised. It's my preference to include them through Skype or some other kind of computer program that they can actually be in the room. They don't have to physically be there, right? I like that. It's not my preference to stagnant record. There's several reasons for it. Yeah, I suppose there's more than one reason. Sound quality is one of them. It's a good point. You never quite get everybody's voice properly unless you mic everyone and make a big fuss. It's not my preference because it stifles creativity and stifles people from really speaking their mind and putting something out there. Because they know it's recorded for all time and they don't want to have taken a position. It'll cause people to not take a position and to just sit there and nod their head at anything. So I'm not in favor of that, but I am in favor of conference calls, so to speak. I kind of like the video one. It's a little more personal, but conference calls, yeah, where everybody is in on it and it's live and we can talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not big on the recording. I understand, because I have empathy, I understand that people are rightfully reluctant to speak their mind on a recording because they might modify later, right? And it come back to bite them. Yeah, they're with politicians a lot around here, around the United States. Now that the internet exists, everything's kind of online that anybody ever wrote, any kind of speech that was recorded, right? And they get caught a lot changing their position on things. But truthfully, and then it gets to be a big brouhaha and like that. But truthfully, something that you said or did when you were a college student, and these people are in their 60s usually, when you were a college student or a high school debate team or something that was recorded and is now on the internet, I don't know that should really count against you 45 years later, because you've changed. You've changed your opinion. You've changed your mind. You've modified. You've grown up. You've had experiences. And so, yeah, so I'm not big on that. I've done it mainly for legal reasons, because we're having like a deposition, which is a negotiation in and of itself, right? Yeah. A deposition gets recorded because it has legal ramifications. An actual negotiation, not so much, in my opinion. Yeah. You want to use technology to its best effect, have everybody in the room live, even if they're not physically there. Right? Yeah. So what else should we do for open listening and cooperation? Yes, you have to get the CEO to come and listen openly. And that's usually not impossible if the participants are fairly flexible in their time and you give it enough notice. Partially because even if it's an advisory negotiation, even if it's for show, maybe especially if it's for show, they don't want to show that they refuse to participate, that they were uninterested. You see? Yeah, so it's got a little bit of leverage to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, how else can we listen with an open mind and get cooperation? Yes, thank you. And this goes to really all of the topics. Come to think of it, it goes to everything, let's face it. And that's enforcement of the civility rules, right? And at their very core, because some people are new, thank you all for being here and for your participation. At their core, the civility rules, which are the only rules that Recipe for Peace now actually has, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. That's the core of it. That's the most basic. We will not be rude to one another. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is extremely important. Everybody gets a turn, right? Everybody gets a turn to speak. Nobody is rude. Nobody interrupts, raises their voice, rolls their eyes, sighs. You know, all that kind of stuff. The body language, the little, you know, exclamations under one's breath. No, we will have civility. We will not be rude to one another. And therefore, we will be able to speak with an open mind and listen with an open mind and get cooperation because we all understand each other and we have agreed, right? Right. Yes. Yeah, I suppose they are civility rules of polite listening, as Sydney says. The civility rules of polite listening. Well, you know, it's a good point. We will listen in a polite manner to each other and give the other people that courtesy too. Mm-hmm. The civility rules of polite listening. I like it. Please do remember, and we've talked about civility rules in the past, of course, because they permeate everything. Past shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. And the civility rules need to be enforced by the leader. More some groups more than others. Some groups naturally know them, and you never actually have to state them out loud. And some groups, the civility rules need to be written down and pointed to on a regular basis. The main thing about the civility rules, or the polite listening rules, as Sydney calls them, I like it actually. The main thing about them is you need to enforce them right away. Not let things get out of hand and then go, oops, I was supposed to do something about that. You need to enforce them right away and equally, fair-handedly, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to be consistent. Mm-hmm. Yes, and most of all, and this is true, you yourself as leader must model the civility rules. Yes, you can't enforce something that you are not following, right? Right. We need to be able to model the civility rules and show that this is what we're going to do because it's a really good idea. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're going to model the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Fasai and others are saying you need to listen with an open mind, even if you are of different opinions. Good point. Yeah, Fasai says that sometimes you have a group that is very much of the same opinion. They're pretty much together. And sometimes you have a group that has many diverse opinions. They made a group because they are interested in the outcome. But they are not of the same opinion as to how to get there, or even for the same reason that they want the outcome. See, they've banded together because of the idea of what can be done, but they're not at all on the same page as to the why and as to the how. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And as Fasai says, you must listen with an open mind, even if you're of different opinions. Mm-hmm. And that you need to modify preconceived notions because every group and issues are a new experience. Yeah, every group and issues are a new experience. So, yes, a lot of times, people ask me for an example. A lot of times you've got a group that has the same goal but different reasons. And because they are so different, because the reasons are so different, even though they want the same thing, they approach it from different angles, right? They approach the idea from different angles. So it makes their opinions on what to do kind of diverse. Mm-hmm. The easiest example, really, I saw this with the legalization of marijuana. In the United States, marijuana is still actually federally illegal. Been so for a really long time. There are arguments pro and con, yes, right. And politicians don't like to move very alarmingly to their constituents, right? Yeah. And some areas of the country, the United States is very big, of course, are considered to be more liberal than others, right? And if you want to get the federal government to move on something, you have to go through Congress. You have to get them to vote for it. And they're beholden to their constituencies back home. Not that they worry about that much. They're politicians. But when they go to get reelected, which is every 4 years, they worry about what they've been doing in the 4 years. Not that they've done so much good, but they want to be sure that nobody can point to something specific, like I voted to legalize marijuana, as a bad thing and use it as an opposing platform for someone else to get their job. Right? Right. That's the technicalities of it. All groups banded together, some more successfully than others, to try to get the law changed. As you can see from that explanation, it was eventually understood, and believe me, it took years because it was the way to go, that the federal government could not be moved. Not enough Congress people would vote to legalize marijuana because they came from very conservative states and their constituents wouldn't like it. Right? Right. And so they had to band together and think of another way. The long and short of it is they had to think outside of the box and go for state legalization. Very unusual. Very imaginative. All had to get together and cooperate, different kinds of groups. Who's in the room? They all have the same goal, legalization of marijuana. Started with medical, so we'll go with medical. Who's in the room? You've got all bunch of different people and groups. You've got growers, sellers, the retailers, people who would like to buy it. You've got suppliers of all kinds of stuff to get you to grow better and faster, and seeds, right? You've got distributors, the transportation people. And then, see, those are all the retail end, the selling end. We've got wholesalers too, of course. And then you've got a whole clump of new people and the other people in the room who represent groups who have some sort of debilitating illness that would be helped by marijuana, right? All kinds of people, HIV and multiple sclerosis and glaucoma and all kinds of groups. They all had to cooperate with each other so they could get the law changed. And it was the first ones especially are always a tremendous hurdle because they're trying to do it state by state. The theory, of course, being that if Congress people see that their state thinks that medical marijuana, for example, is a good thing, then they won't be so scared to vote for it when it comes up before the federal government again. See, it's a plan. But meanwhile, everybody's different in the room, but they've got the same goal. And they have to keep that in mind, I've got the same goal, while they're kind of in dispute, right? Yeah, they've got to keep it in mind. They've got to really think on it. Yes. So, you can get the same goal for different reasons. Yes. Now, let's go on to our next topic. Oh, we're not going to make it time-wise. Yes. I always think that this show should probably be longer than an hour, but probably an hour is enough. We pack a lot of stuff in. So what are the types of cooperation do we need? Because we've got, I think, six areas, and we're down one. We talked about full participation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not just being lip service, right? You need to really have people give you their sincere best effort. Mm-hmm. As Hussein says, there's a distinction between voluntary and forced participation, but forced has superiors. Oh, Hussein, you're so right. There's a distinction between voluntary and forced participation, but forced has superiors. Yes, everybody on this level of the organization will, well, for example, go to this class and seminar, because we need cooperation for that too, because we're going to do some team building. We're going to do some exercises together. We're going to really talk and get down to it and not just have it be one of those little time waster things, right? You want to have a takeaway that you can really use. Mm-hmm. And that would be kind of involuntary participation. But we need to have them fully participate. Involuntary because there's a certain level of an organization, and that level goes, right? And, oh, I have other things to do. That kind of a grumpiness. Mm-hmm. No, we're going to really participate. And as Hussein said, you might need to bring up the topic of the fact that this is a requirement, right? And that somebody above this level of pay grade has required that they go and learn something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it won't be hard. It won't be unpleasant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is a good point also. And it's something that that Rosanna and others are talking about, and Suki, that sometimes you've got a level of involvement, some sort of a managerial level has to go. You've got real-world hierarchy that comes in and needs to be acknowledged. We say when we're in seminar and workshop that everybody's equal and everybody's opinion counts equally and like that. But the real-world hierarchy is that when they leave the room, sometimes some of the people are bosses, right? They can impact you if you didn't agree with them, if you didn't take their side, so to speak. Yeah, and people get petty about that because people are people. And you have to think about that. You have to think about the power play in it, because it will prevent people from speaking freely. And then you won't have all the options in front of you when you go into negotiation or during the negotiation. We need to have our options. We need to know what the repercussions are if we do this or if we do that. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Suki and others are saying you not only have to have transparency, but you need to provide a way to communicate if some are not fully participating, an anonymous option. I kind of like the anonymous option. Yeah, you guys are doing such good catchphrases today. I do. I make it very clear that I am not above anybody else. I'm the person brought in for the negotiation. I'm the third party impartial, really. And I don't have a side, so that I will not be put out if you're not on my side, right? Right. And that means that we are going to need either an anonymous option, send me your thoughts and we'll read them out loud, we won't know who they came from exactly. For anonymous options, I must confess that I don't keep them completely anonymous. I know whose opinion it was, because it allows me to understand what's happening with the group. And also, it allows me to understand if it's a really considered valued one, or it's kind of a notion of someone. Yes, this is true. If I am, I as leader, am the one that you can talk to, right, all the time. And we're going to have, I want you to participate fully, but I understand that there's oftentimes a power hierarchy. So you want something to be put to the group, but you don't want to stand up and do it. That's what the leader's for. Come and talk to me. It will be anonymous in the sense that I won't say who told me. That's anonymous to the group. I do not take anonymous totally. I want to know who is of that opinion so that I can do something that we all must do every time we get together, really, and answer the 5W questions before I present it to the group. Who, what, where, when, why? Who, what, where, when, why? I want to know the answer to those questions before I present the idea, present the argument to the group. I want to know what's good for us is what it really is, yeah, and not just some sort of a pet peeve. So we're not completely anonymous. I, as leader, know. But, yeah. You need to have full cooperation. Sometimes volunteers are all gung-ho. You need to keep up their enthusiasm. Because also it's human nature to say, oh, my God, this is taking forever, right? And you need full participation, even if someone needs to kind of tell you about it as leader and then have it presented to the group. Let's get on to the next topic, which is developing empathy for cooperation. You need to have some empathy in order to cooperate with each other. Remember that empathy is understanding, not agreement. Empathy is understanding, not agreement. Right? Right. Yes, a good point. Han and others are saying that understanding is the first step to reaching consensus and to negotiating. Yeah, understanding. That goes to our 5W questions also, right? Who, what, where, when, and why? Let's find those things out so we have empathy and understanding for why you have that position. And we may all need to, in fact, we oftentimes, well, always is a big word, but lots and lots of percentages oftentimes. We need to have, we have our opinion, but we need to modify it. Everybody needs to work towards the middle and have empathy and understanding for each other. So we know where the middle is what it really amounts to. How will we know exactly what it is that we want if we can't figure out, for example, what our goal is, what success looks like, right? Yeah. George and others are talking about the power dynamic. This also goes to our next topic, which is work as a team, really a team, and not just people who say they're a team because they're supposed to say that, right? We've all seen those, yeah. You know how you have an involuntary group, but you work them around so that they become enthusiastic and want to come? You get the, if you, teams sometimes are like that too. They have trouble cooperating with each other because they wouldn't have chosen each other as team members, right? Yeah. If it's the right kind of group and they can do it, and it's not just reinforcing some sort of strange preconceived notions, I oftentimes let people choose who they like to work with. I ask for volunteers, right? Yeah. Because you want to pick something that's within your area of expertise to be a team member on. Yes. So that you know what you're doing and you have value to the group. Yeah. Yes, but the work as a team, you have to have some empathy for each other, right? so that we can work together. Mm-hmm. And yes, George is saying you need to understand the power dynamic. That's true. It's true of all of these. It's true of life. You have to understand, like we talked about hierarchy when we talked about participation, the hierarchy within the group. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, even if you're all kind of equal in level, in, well, just generally speaking, you're all kind of equal. Sometimes the whole group is the team, right? But sometimes you need to divide up into smaller groups. And that's when volunteering is good. You just have people raise their hand. Who has expertise in this matter, for example? Mm-hmm. Yes. And you do indeed need to understand the power dynamic, especially if we have uneven participants, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Work as a team. You know, this is like the best sentence of all because it's so important. Cheryl and others are saying that when you're on a team, you need to treat everyone with respect. With respect. I suppose that is the civility rules. But you need to treat everyone with respect. Yeah. Be polite. Be respectful. Respectful of their position, respectful of their opinions. And you can expect that that respect, that courtesy, will be extended back to you. Mm-hmm. Which is a very important point. It needs to be extended back to you so that we can know what we're doing, so that we can work as a team, so that we can get this going, so that we can keep going forward. Yeah, not just circle around arguing. People asking how to work, how to get the team assigned. I'm going to vote. Quite a few of you are talking about different ways. I'm going to vote with Hong and others who say that the assignment according to ability. Now, for practice, for classes and things, because they're big audiences, oftentimes really big audiences, depending on what we're doing, for practice, I like to assign teams randomly by color or something. You'll see the book. There's different ways to assign teams. Because it's good to try to make a team for practice out of very diverse people. Not so good in the real world, where we actually have an actual outcome that needs to be met. See, there's a difference. In the theoretical, yeah, you should have team members of all sorts and try to make a team, try to work together. Sometimes that experiment is harder than others, depending, right? Yeah. Yes, yeah, so assign teams according to ability. I like to assign teams according to ability and to who has volunteered to be on the team because they're feeling enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. Yes. What else do teams need to do to work as a team? A lot of people are talking about researching all options. Yeah. Yes. People are talking about expertise when you're on a team. And when you choose a team, for example, I like to choose people who have kind of complementary expertise. Because if they've all got the same thing, that's nice, and they can research the various options. I'm not adverse to it, but they all see the issues from the same angle. Does that make sense? Yeah, they see the issues from the same angle, which means they're all kind of going to come to the same conclusion. But I'd like someone fresh-eyed to look at it and to see maybe there's another way. Mm-hmm. And in today's day and age with technology expanding so quickly, there's oftentimes an actual another way to communicate, to prove something, to reach, there's lots of new things coming out, new software, new apps, new stuff that we don't even know that we don't know about because we don't know about it. Right? Yeah. And so it's important to research all the options, too, when you get to your team. Yes, a lot of people are talking about bringing in an expert when you've got some sort of an impasse. Yes, please do. Nowadays, that could be a researched expert on the Internet, but make certain that you've got all sides and that you didn't yell hallelujah and stop when you found one that happened to agree with you. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea. You need to look. You need to look everywhere. You need to really look and see what it is that we want to do, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And it really is imperative that gets done. That we really watch and see if we need an expert or not. And if we do, let's call in maybe both sides, different experts. Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, the Internet's great, but sometimes you see something that really agrees with your team, with your group, and you go, well, there it is. That's the answer. Let's make sure that that really is the answer and that we haven't just found what we wanted to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now let's talk about cooperation with outsiders, which is our next topic, right? Because oftentimes we do. Well, cooperation with an expert, maybe an outsider. Yeah, that's cooperation with an outsider. That's true. But I was thinking more of the lines with a different organization, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A different organization, or perhaps an outspoken proponent, and you can invite them to join you, right? Cooperation with outsiders oftentimes involves organizations, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, there's benefits. A lot of you are talking about the increased resources. You don't have to duplicate. Activity is what it really is. That saves time and money, which are your resources. Never forget that time is a resource. Really a more finite one than money, if you think about it. Yeah. And so you get together and you increase your resources, right? And increase your efficiency, too. If you can work together with outside groups, with other teams for the same goal, you'll increase your efficiency, and you won't be running around with the administrative stuff so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, increase your resources, increase your efficiency. There's power in numbers, as Anna's pointing out, a lot of other people too. Especially power in numbers if you're going to need to approach the public, and you need to say that we have 55,000 members. Well, that would be impressive, right? People want to join. And they say, well, that many, and it's very interesting, and I'd like to know about it, and I have an opinion that I'd like to voice, right? Yeah. And it is the power in numbers, especially when you're talking to the authorities, with the media, which we're going to get to next. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pointed out that Zoe and others are pointing out that it increases your level of expertise to join with outsiders. Increases your level of expertise. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, sometimes the cooperation is for one issue, one area, right? And the organizations are not exactly going to blend. Even so, even if it's just for this one time, always remember in the back of your mind, because you're going to need to deal with it, that you've got a leadership dynamic. Because you're not the only leader. You've got the other group has a leader. Maybe there's more than one group. And nobody wants to be taken over. They like being leader, right? Right. Nobody wants to lose their position. Nobody wants to find out that they're not the leader anymore. They are the follower, which is embarrassing to their prior followers, and therefore they won't follow. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you always have the leadership dynamic of power. I want to be in charge. Yes. Very important to know. Very important to think about. I want to be the leader. But there's other leaders. They need to be accommodated. They need to be pointed out as very, very important to the process. They need to be publicly thanked for their time, right? Mm-hmm. The power dynamic of leadership. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Each team has a leader, right? And the teams work together, and the leaders then kind of become the spokespersons. Mm-hmm. And they kind of give a synopsis, and they need to be able to deal with the other team's spokesperson. Remember the civility rules. Remember the five questions, who, what, where, when, and why, right? And sometimes because there's a power play and nobody wants to no longer be the leader, sometimes you have to coexist side by side but not really mingling. Mm-hmm. It's a little less effective because you've still got a lot of personal expenses for the group, so to speak. But it is oftentimes necessary to just come together like once a month and report how it's going and brainstorm. Yeah, because you can't usurp someone else's leader. Sometimes organizations meld. Most times they don't. Like businesses where you have a takeover, a merger. Generally speaking, the company that was taken over, that was merged into the other bigger, usually bigger, now bigger company, right, in business. Generally speaking, the company that was dissolved into the other, their leadership is offered a nice retirement package. They don't come along with it. Maybe for a transition period, but they're still offered a nice, they're offered incentive to move on, really, right? Yeah. Because their dynamic of leadership will not blend with the other. You can't have too many leaders. Too many people at the top. Too many people, maybe with their own followers, it's a good point, right? Yeah. So the new organization kind of cleans house. Now, we've talked about dealing with the media, right? And of being polite, and of now dealing with outsiders who may have connections to the media. So somewhere along the line, assuming that our topic is of general interest, the topic of our negotiation and not just internal, but even if it's internal, you might also need this. Your group's going to need a spokesperson, which is our last topic and for this time. A spokesperson, going to need somebody who can say, I'm the person to speak to, media-wise. Mm-hmm. It's very important. You need a united front, and you need somebody who is consistent, and somebody we've agreed is going to say that's a fair representation. In this day and age of citizen reporters, it's extremely important that you not have any from this organization, because it will be quoted out of context, especially if you've got a whole bunch of citizens reporters. I have actually seen this. This is not just theoretical. Groups sometimes in the process have a whole bunch of people that are texting and tweeting and blogging and like that. And they're sending out into the world their thoughts and opinions at this time, at this moment, in this particular instance. Yeah, it's like free form. Yes. Yeah, and if you've got everybody doing it, you've got an awful lot of information sent out into the world for A, your opposition to see. Sometimes it's somebody, sometimes you have an opposition groups that are very well organized, right? And they don't agree with you at all. But we're going to reach out to them, right? To see if we can cooperate, to see if we can do something to mend the animosity, right? Even if they're still on the other side, you can't have animosity take the day. It's not civil. And so we need a media spokesperson, because all that blogging and stuff, honest to God, people will take pieces, because now you can do the taking out of pieces with the computer, from everybody's, and craft a statement that was neither meant nor done originally. Now, is it all the pieces that were said? Yes, kind of. But it's been crafted into an editorial piece, and it will go everywhere. So you must have a media spokesperson who is responsible for dealing with media response. Yeah, Anna and others are talking about the fact that you always need to be careful of wording. The parts get taken out of context. Boy, they sure do. I actually have a rule that we do not use electronic devices while we are in session. Because it's the only way to keep people from blogging and tweeting the darn thing, is what it really is. Yeah, we will not use electronic devices while we're in session. And we make it very clear that if somebody wants to have an opinion, know how we're doing, do a report, an article, they're going to be directed to the spokesperson, right? Yeah. Yeah, it also creates, as Eva says, an atmosphere of trust. Because you need to have trust in order to have cooperation, right? And this way you understand that things are under control, and people really like that. You know, they roll their eyes about no use of electronic equipment. And sometimes you might even have to confiscate, like a kindergarten teacher. But if they don't do it on the spot, they'll have a moment to reflect. They'll see how the information modified, the notions modified, right? Yeah. Yes, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, no one who loves the law or sausage should see how it's made. Yeah, it's like the law. You shouldn't see how it's made. It's messy. Okay, we now have about, 6 minutes. But I know that you guys really like the recipes. And this one's been hanging around for a while. So I'm going to do the adventure recipe. If you are going to have food, and you are, you understand that food is a tool to get us together in a convivial atmosphere and enforce the civility rules, right? Right. So that we can gain cooperation, because we've decided that we can work together. If you're going to have food, you're going to take a survey, and you're going to ask if anybody has a food allergy, a prohibition, some sort of food that they won't eat, right? You're also going to take the survey and disseminate it so that everybody knows. And when people come with food, you're going to ask them to come with a list. What is in it? So that I can determine by running my eye down the list if I can eat it or not. Yes. So we're going to do the adventure recipe. I like to have a safe recipe always, which is something that everyone can eat. The adventure recipe is not something that everyone can't eat. We've taken the survey. But it has some ingredients that some people might decide that they don't want, like Chianti, although you have taken the survey for this particular group. And it might have some things that people are not familiar with and haven't eaten before. Yeah. So, this is a Chianti meatloaf. You want to make it not an adventure recipe? Well, we can take out the Chianti. And instead of that liquid, we could use some beef stock. It will not, however, be as good. Mm-hmm. Just saying, there are better recipes for just plain meatloaf. So let's go get our meatloaf done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to have, let's have 2 pounds of beef. Sometimes I like half beef and half pork, ground, right? Mm-hmm. Half pork and half some sort of a beef with some fat content to it, ground. Around here in the United States, you can buy ground meat. I personally like the 80-20 because it's 20% fat, 80% meat. It's just more tasty. I know it'll shrink more, but it's still more tasty. Okay, we've got our 2 pounds of meat. That will make one meatloaf. If you want to make more than one, you, of course, double, but put in separate pans. Mm-hmm. Let's have 2 eggs. We're going to beat them up. Oh, 1/3 cup of shredded Parmesan. Let's have 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs. I personally like the kind that are pre-made. You can make your own if you like. And if you're going to get the pre-made ones and you have the ability to do so, I like Italian seasoning. The breadcrumbs actually come seasoned. It gives a little extra kick. Mm-hmm. Let's have some scallions, like 4 of them chopped up real nice and thin. Mm-hmm. 1/4 cup of tomato paste, 1/4 cup of Chianti, which is red wine, kind of a nice dry red wine. Never cook with anything you wouldn't drink. You know, people say it's cooking wine. There is no such thing. That just means it's crappy wine. Don't use it. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 cup of garlic cloves that we're going to mince up. And we're going to make a cheese filling for this, because we're going to squish it in the middle. Oh, it's so delicious. And it's very, very showy. It looks really nice. Mm-hmm. In fact, I like to slice it up before people start taking it, because if they have to slice it themselves, it's messy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could slice it into thin pieces. We can't slice meatloaf incredibly thin, right? You could cut it down the middle, too, to make half slices. Here's the cheese filling. Now, that was all for the meatloaf itself, right? Because you can't put too much wet into the meat. It's not going to be a good thing. The cheese filling is another 1/2 cup of Chianti, right? Let's have 1/2 cup of mozzarella. Mm-hmm. And, well, we're going to chop up a little bit of parsley to put in there, too. Preheat our oven, 350. We're going to combine all the meat stuff, the cheese, the eggs, the breadcrumbs, the onions, the tomato paste, the 1/4 cup of wine, the garlic. Add the meat, squish, 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 all together. Oh, yummy. So we'll stick 1/2 of it into our meatloaf pan, like a 3-quart. You need a fairly big meatloaf pan. I don't know if there are teeny meatloaf pans, but don't do it. 1/2 of the mixture. Nice and firm. You might want to push it down in the middle and build up the edges a little bit, because we're going to spoon our cheese filling, which is the Chianti and the mozzarella, right? We're going to spoon that in, into the middle. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I like shredded mozzarella. You can use slices if you like. I just think shredded comes out softer. Cheese filling, yum, 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 not to the very edges, just down the middle. Remaining meat, top. Squish it all together, right? You want to make sure that it doesn't come apart. So you want to make sure that the sides are really kind of pinched together and that you've got those filling right in the center and not to the edges, because you want the edges to close. Mm-hmm. We're going to now take that. Let's have another little bit of wine, 1/4 cup, right? Maybe 1/2 cup. Let's pour it around the meatloaf, just on top of it, right? Bake it. It'll take about 1 hour, right? Yeah. If you like it to look kind of cool, at the very last minute, you can put some sliced mozzarella on the top. It gives it a nice little coating, right? I don't always do it because it depends if you're serving whole slices. If you're serving quarter slices or whatever, the mozzarella will break. So you can decide how you think about it. Always let a meatloaf stand about 10 minutes before you serve it. It gets it settled, especially a stuffed one. We're now going to slice it up. Yum, 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 yum. Right? And it is delicious. It is full of cheese, right? It is showy, and everybody likes it. But it is our adventure recipe because it does have quite a bit of wine. And really, it kind of needs it. If you're going to go for a safe recipe with meatloaf, do something else. And for heaven's sakes, don't use pork. I kind of like the half meat, half pork, although the meat keeps its shape a little bit better. So I'm always on the fence about it. So that is our adventure recipe. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being here. We are out of time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Fire shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here and for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.